Welcome to Roguecast, the official podcast of Rogues Gallery. We'll talk comics for the week, as well as whatever news is on our pop cultural radar. I'm Randy.
I'm Nick.
This is Dave.
And now, on with the show.
Episode 337 of the Roguecast, recorded June 22nd, 2021. Taking me non-anxiety.
It's normal week. We didn't have any week off. We didn't have anything crazy. It's just a normal week.
All right. So
don't
things should
jinx
just be,
it, Randy.
Things should just be normal. Like the ceiling will fall down in flames
yes.
on us while we're recording this.
I mean, it did rain and go from like 105 to 85 or something like that. But okay. You know,
or Prime Day will, you know, do the robot uprising. I don't have no idea.
It's another big comics week though. There's a lot of new number ones and stuff this week.
Yep.
Seems like a big DC week. As I look over there, I'm reminded that we got a Hawkeye statue with Pizza Dog.
Yep.
So there's that.
Let's see. What I forget what topics we're going to talk about today. Quiet Place 2.
We're talking about the Quiet Place 2 because I've finally seen it.
Yeah,
that was the last one.
I will continue to wait for 20 days and watch it on Paramount Plus.
That's crazy talk. Is notable, Randy. How can you do that, or Nick? How can you do that when you buy all the other movies? Why do you hate The Quiet Place?
No, I can't. If
it was a Disney movie, you'd have bought it by now.
If I could buy The Quiet Place 2.
Nick is holding off. Nick wants his return to theater to be special. He wants it to be Fast 9, which is what it's going to be.
Hell yeah.
That's what I was going to say is, like, that is this week.
You guys went with lesser movies. I'm going with the best.
I was going to say, In the Heights and Quiet Place 2 are both very good movies. However, they are not going to be Fast 9.
That's right.
They're not
which
be
we will
featuring.
Be... We will be seeing this coming Thursday.
Thursday night.
And we'll talk about it next week to let you know about the absolute bro mayhem that
we
experienced.
Report back a quarter mile at a time.
Because I'm sure its running time is 2 hours and 30 minutes.
Our 10 listeners are our ride or dies. Believe us, we know it. We know it.
We didn't know what to call our fans. They're our ride or dies.
Yes. pod or die.
Pod or die.
it's not super catchy.
Not really.
Yeah, so... this will be my first official Fast and Furious movie in the theater with you guys.
Is it what might be the last of the series?
No, I thought they were going to do at least 10.
Yeah, the last one is split up into two movies. So the number...
10 and 10.5.
When do they formally start crossing over with other properties?
Well, Jurassic World 4 is definitely going to be a Fast and Furious movie.
Because I want to see him, like, get into a Bond movie. Because I'm just, like, ready for, like, some Bond villain to be kind of, like, doing his, like, talking about his master plan.
No.
And you hear, like, in the background, and, like, a car just explodes through
the
wall.
I don't think it works with Bond. I think if you...
Oh, it'll work.
If you... Put it with, like, Mission Impossible. That
Mission
works.
Impossible Fast and Furious would make total sense.
Yeah. Complete.
Mission Impossible Jurassic World makes total sense.
Dominic Toretto,
no.
It's
actually the same vibe if you do it with Bond. It'd be the same sort of, even maybe better vibe than, what's the one, the last movie that came out that had the two?
Hobbs and Shaw. Yeah.
In the sense that Bond would be there's a proper way to do spying, even though he himself is a larger than life spy, and they're like, we do things our own
way. Hobbs and Shaw and Bond.
Yeah, that's kind of the vibe. They're all like, let us take the wheel when it's the chase things, and he's like, you don't know how those buttons work. And
well, we're going to talk about in the news the Transformers, but Transformers absolutely work with Fast and Furious.
Yeah. It's almost the ideal combination. Finally, the humans are ready to stand up for themselves.
I feel like the G.I. Joe, the Snake Eyes movie, I saw the trailer for that again when I saw Quiet Place.
Yep.
That is also for sure going to cross right over into the Fast and Furious G.I. Joe.
Yeah, they should just go ahead and start doing it.
It's crazy that a G.I. Joe trailer exists, and I haven't watched it because I'm not excited about it.
You know what's interesting? The trailer for Snake Eyes Origins is with The Quiet Place, which means thematically it should have been all about Snake Eyes who doesn't speak. But this is Snake Eyes before he loses his voice, and it's weird. I don't like it.
I like Henry Golding a lot.
I do,
but does the trailer show him speak?
It does.
Okay, I couldn't remember
he's
talking.
Charming, witty guy.
Does Storm Shadow, like, rip his vocal cords?
I don't know. We didn't see it.
Okay.
Maybe that's what'll happen.
The only other people I saw, like, is Storm Shadow in the trailer?
Yes.
Okay, and then Scarlet is somewhere in there.
Yeah,
I
she is. That, but
briefly
glimpsed. I saw a Storm Shadow.
Look for red.
Okay, yeah. But anyway, I don't know. It looks like a Mission Impossible, John Wick, Fast and Furious trailer, so that's why I'm thinking all these things, they could definitely do it. And they should. Let's just start crossing stuff over. We need to go back in theaters.
Godzilla.
That's how you do it.
Godzilla and Fast and Furious.
Fast and Furious and Godzilla.
Yep. They're like, we got to lead this guy out of the city now. All right, just think about it. Just think about it.
It's not the worst idea I've heard.
Ghostbusters, for sure.
Yeah, for sure.
Actually, a ghostly car? How cool would that be if they had...
Driven by Brian!
He's alive.
Who are you talking about?
Brian could drive it.
Brian?
The guy who died.
Right. I was thinking of Ghostbusters
characters.
Because
he's alive. But no, Giselle can come back as the driver of the ghost car.
Yeah, I was going
to
say that...
I've seen that there's a fan petition rolling around to bring back Giselle.
She's busy. I'm sure she doesn't want to come back, but go on.
Who is coming back?
Han.
I was going to... There was a time when he could have come back as a ghost.
Everyone says this, that Gal Gadot is, like, too good for a Fast and the Furious movie, and I'm like... Do they understand how big Fast and the Furious movies are and how much money they rake in globally?
I think what they mean to say is she's too classy for these meathead
movies. Helen Mirren says it differently.
Yeah, Helen Mirren's the driver of the car this time.
And Charlize Theron. She put on her Cockney accent when she says, like, are you with me? And she's like, are you with me? That's how she signals she's switched into lower class mode. She's downshifted, if you will.
Regardless, it's delightful.
Actually, Dave, as you say it, though, Helen Mirren, that's your way in. The Shaws, that's your way into James Bond. You'd be like, the Shaws trained for MI6, but then they washed out MI6 training. Because weren't they, like, special ops for, like, the British intelligence or something?
Shaw was. He was like an SAS.
I'm
kind
just saying,
of.
Shaw may have known Bond in their training days, and you can definitely do this.
People who don't like Fast and Furious are like, what are these guys doing? Why have they been talking for 5 minutes about it?
People who don't like Fast and Furious are not Potter Dyers.
I feel like our listeners need to send in their ideas of who they should cross
over
with.
Who should they cross over?
Yeah.
Get crazy with it.
Just understand, they do have to cross over with things.
Yes, for sure.
This is the nature of this franchise. It's very good spirited. It would be fun in all the dumbest, best ways.
Yes.
Just go ahead and figure out what the best crossover
is. And just, Rob, you don't have to send... I know you want them to cross over with Terror Inc. You can just leave that out.
You have inferred it, Randy?
Yeah, I knew that was the first thing I was going to say. I'm going to say, we got that. It's covered. It's now been mentioned.
What else? So do we have store news?
Yeah,
anything?
We have a little bit of store news. Just a reminder again, the Forgotten Realms pre-release, our sort of Return to Magic is coming up. We have spots left. It's going to be Friday, July 16th. Come out and play Magic with me and Anna and try out the new software, and it'll be fun. And hopefully not too chaotic.
Here's my pitch.
Yep.
Don't come out to play with Randy and Anna. Come out to destroy Randy and Anna.
That is what will happen. I am notoriously terrible at constructed deck games. I'm really bad.
Sounds notoriously entertaining.
Is this the first time you've played, like
paper
live
magic?
Paper
yes.
Magic?
Yes. I'll also be, like, waiting for the cards to come to life. I'll be like, well, I'll put it down and be like, where's the sound effects?
Make the cartoon animation.
Make the cartoon animation. I don't know how this works. Now I'll have to do the math on my own instead of a computer doing it for me.
I don't know.
Yeah. So I've never ever done a paper pre-release, so this is a big thing for me. It's also the only one I'm doing. Not getting back into Magic. I just want to do the Forgotten Realms.
Dave, he says this.
But not. It's not happening. By the way, we got that cool poster that's got Drizzt and Guinevere. Guinevere.
Yeah. What was it for?
It's for
the Forgotten Realms release.
Yeah.
Oh,
it's all
dang,
shiny.
That's dope. I didn't actually see it.
Magic
Times
D&D. It's all shiny. It's up on our window.
I need to go see it now.
Yeah.
Stop the podcast. We paused the podcast. I'm back. It's neat.
That was Dave running out to check the poster. All right. Couple games did come in. Mandala, the two-player, where you sort of make patterns.
Yeah, yeah.
A really fun two-player game that finally came back in stock. And a new game called Dubito, which is packaged in a giant D6. It is a modified Liar's Dice.
Yeah, that sounds super cool.
So, yeah.
A handful of times I played Liar's Dice, always a good time.
You played with pirates.
Right? Yar. Yar, I did. You're damn right.
We don't have a ton of news this week, but I think at the top of it... Blackula is getting a reboot.
Do people know that there was once a movie called Blackula? And that yes, it's about Black Dracula.
You say there once was. It still is. It still exists.
They don't know about it. They don't understand things that happened in the 70s.
So yes, in 1972, there was a film called Blackula.
Which, what I know from friends who have seen it, and I have not actually seen it, is that it is played straight. It is, though it came out in Blaxploitation era, the era of Shaft and all that stuff, it is played straight. He's like a African prince who was like turned. I think who might have actually been involved with the slave trade in like the 1800s.
Dave,
do you have a thing?
May
Yeah, hit it.
Blackula is an ancient African prince who is cursed by Dracula after he fails to agree to end the slave trade. Blackula is entombed and awakens 200 years later, ready to avenge the death of his ancestors and of those responsible for robbing his people of their work, culture, and heritage as they are appropriated for profit.
So Dracula refused to end it,
yeah.
And Blackula, who at the time would have been like Prince whatever, Blackool,
yep.
would have been like, stop it, Dracula, and he's like, no, I'll tear your throat out, and he did,
yep.
And then he vamped him up, and now Blackula's out for, he's actually going up against Dracula?
I believe so. He was Dracula's enemy.
I ain't lying. This is a great premise.
But also, then they did a sequel in 1973 called The Scream of Blackula.
Yeah, sounds right.
Yeah, Scream, Blackula, Scream.
Yep.
So the reboot picks up after the sequel and be set in a metropolitan city post coronavirus pandemic.
That actually sounds kind of cool.
Yeah.
I like when movies are bold enough to say that they are taking into account the ones, even if they came out during, like, kind of like in this case, kind of like a more pulp grindhouse era, that they're like, yep, that's the continuity. This will probably be conceptually in some ways a remake,
yep.
But also a sequel.
Yep.
And I dig that. I'm going to try and watch, you know what, I'm going to try and watch sometime soon Blackula so I can report on it for the podcast.
Good. That's a good homework.
Yes.
Tom Taylor teased and then revealed that his Dark Ages series, which was originally pre-pandemic,
mm-hmm.
Is actually coming out, I believe, in November.
This is from Marvel.
It's from Marvel. It's him and Ivan Coelho, who did a lot of the art on Venom. He's a really good artist.
Okay.
And basically, I guess
he works with pretty good artists these days.
The pitch is that like, the power goes out in the Marvel Universe, and like people are maybe turned into other things, or like the question is like who were you when the lights went out? So it's like all the heroes are going to be. It sounds very Deceased-esque.
Do we get the impression this is some sort of fallen Marvel world?
I think so. I'm wondering if it's going to be like Dark Force Dimension or something.
If he is playing around with continuity the way he tends to, whether it's with Injustice or with Deceased, I'm kind of all about it. He does a good job with those sort of alternate worlds. And it's even like one of the earliest things he did because he was working on Earth 2 for DC after James Robinson's initial run. And he does, you know, what ifs, of course, and stuff like that are famous for, you know, you can kill characters off, you can do big dramatic things. Well, he manages to do it usually without, like, getting into that, like, oh, he's just being exploitive.
Right.
He's got good stories to tell. His characters are often, like, the best version of that kind of character.
But do we know if this... Marvel doesn't tend to do a lot of alternate reality stuff. I mean, they'll do occasionally.
I guess, the biggest thing that they did was, like, when they did the Secret War crossover years ago.
It's true.
And that was, like, all their... A world made up of all the different eras and stuff like that.
But it does seem like the kind of thing, you know, that he would do. Because
yeah.
Deceased was all alternate world, Injustice was alternate world. So it's a good thing where you can play around a little
bit. Tom Taylor, I'm going to say, I think everybody here knows of our fondness for him, but he's been particularly cooking lately with Batman the Detective. New volume of Deceased hit last week, which I'm reading through right now.
Super good.
Super good.
Yep.
And what else? I feel like there's something else I'm missing.
Suicide Squad?
Yeah, I mean, Suicide
Nightwing?
Squad recently. Nightwing, that was the big one. Yeah, Suicide Squad now out, his run now out in hardcover, I think.
Yep.
I would prefer, as we discussed off mic a few days ago, that his Dark Age for Marvel was actually medieval-type versions of the characters.
Mm-hmm.
But that said, I'm pretty much on board checking out whatever he's doing. So.
Yeah, same. I'm looking forward to it. And the promo art looks great. So, a little bit of kind of interesting news. TSR, the publishers of Dungeons & Dragons, they were bought by Wizards of the Coast.
Let's say publishers of D&D originally, and then they like disappeared or were bought by Wizards.
They were bought by Wizards
in the 90s, right?
Wizards bought them in 97, and then TSR branding sort of went away in 2000. So TSR has been gone for about 20 years. TSR is coming back as a new company. It is run by one of the people, executive vice president is. E. Gary Gygax Jr., son of D&D creator Gary Gygax. Also, their first launch is going to be, was a Kickstarter in 2019, and it's getting a wide release called Giantlands. That was by Stephen Dinehart IV and James M. Ward. James M. Ward has done a ton of game design stuff. But they also brought in Jeff Arleason, who co-wrote a classic D&D adventure called The Hidden Shrine of Tomakan, And then also Larry Elmore, the artist.
Yeah, wow.
So they are going to do that. They're also working on a second game called Tales and Tots.
Is that for youths?
It sounds like maybe. There's no further details.
Or for tater tots.
They also published something called the Top Secret RPG, which I didn't know that was still in print, but...
Oh, man, yeah. Top Secret is like one of the early spy RPGs, basically.
So anyway, that's kind of notable. I was looking for Giant Lands to see if there was any info, and all there is like this little video, and I guess it is weirdly a game that has, like, cosplay and live action built into it.
Okay.
So it's like tabletop with cosplay and cutting-edge technology, and it's sort of weird. It's, something. One of the FAQ questions is this actually a theme park? Not yet, but every time you share and support our team and vision, you help us get one step closer to make it happen. We currently have events planned as we scale up to a proper park. Like, what is this?
So what this sounds like to me, it sounds like one of those live dungeon things, or what would be the... quest night locally, if anybody's been to that.
Yeah.
It sounds like it's in a way to do sort of small quest night type events, and I bet that it looks like they're probably trying to raise funds over time and make this a thing where they can actually have paid for events with a higher budget.
So they're saying the box game will be available in spring 2020, and our current goal is to open the park spring of 2022.
That's nuts. That's really crazy. Are pushing for it.
Yeah.
But that said, if anybody's ever done any of those type of things, they are actually quite a bit of fun.
Yeah.
And I would be very much down for somebody who, you know, if they can pull off a nice codified version of it, you know, that has rules that, you know, wherever you play it, and, you know, if you play it at, like, one of their parks or whatever, or is you know the rules and you know exactly how it all comes together, that's pretty cool.
I also see Austin local Jeff D. as one of their illustrators, so... Yep.
What I was going to say is, you know, ultimately their games are going to have to prove themselves.
Yep.
You know, I know gamers are not one to be completely taken in by just marketing and stuff, but you simply cannot come up with a better known name related to, you know, in gamer circles than TSR, even though they've been defunct or off the grid for decades.
Right. Yep.
They are iconic. So
yeah.
that's interesting. I wish them well. I hope they do good stuff.
The last thing is just a title. We have a title for the next live action Transformers movie. It is Transformers: Rise of the Beasts.
What do you think that has to do with?
Fast and the Furious.
The Beast and the Furious?
Yes, the Beast and the Furious.
Anyway, so yeah, we presume that this is going to be a Beast Wars type tie-in. Nick, you said that you know somehow that it is in the, what, Bumblebee continuity?
Yeah, I mean, the article that I read said that it takes place in 1994, so just a couple of years after Bumblebee.
It'll have a grunge soundtrack?
Probably.
I mean, honestly, a well-chosen soundtrack could be pretty cool.
Yeah.
A 90s soundtrack.
I'm still unclear on Beast Wars. Yeah, yeah. So they're just beast shapes instead of vehicles? Is that the big difference?
Yes. They don't turn into vehicles.
They were originally supposed to... They have fur.
They have fur.
They were originally supposed to, like, to do this for exploration missions, to, like, to go on to other planets and, like, look like the indigenous life forms.
I see.
But when they, like, crash land on... an Earth that looks prehistoric but actually is the future, is that the idea?
Yeah.
In Beast Wars, it is irradiated with energon. There's like energon kind of like everywhere, and the energon will actually cause stasis lock if they stay in their robot forms. Really bad, they would break down and die. So they have to regularly turn into beast forms, if only to avoid that.
So this takes place in the 90s. Does this mean they're going to crash into like a creationist park and that's where the dinosaurs come from?
I'm going to guess it is going to very much be its own spin on the premise.
No, I want it to be a creationist park.
I bet it'll be something like they unearth, like the Transformers that have been on...
Dormant,
and
yeah.
It'll be variations of...
Yeah, it works pretty well if you just say it took place in prehistoric times.
Because you can't have Optimus Prime... I guess Optimus Primal is not technically Optimus Prime.
Right, if they say that it was, you know... I mean, he's supposed to have been around all that time, and if it was some... variant program, they were trying to duplicate him and, you know, use him for this exploration group that they were creating or whatever it is. However they recast it, I'm sure they can come up with
all I know
answers.
Is I'm hoping we get a live-action Rat Trap.
I mean, everybody knows the Rat Trap is the best, and it'd be foolish to do a Beast Wars story without him.
I'm weirded out by this whole thing and skeptical, but I will trust your love of the beasts.
I don't know. I, I'm... I don't know if the article said he was directing it or not, but hopefully it's they get somebody like the guy who did the Bumblebee, which was the guy who did Kubo and the Two Strings.
Right.
Yeah, Bumblebee was just the right mixture of kind of like action adventure and humor and kind of good-hearted with some fun 80s music.
And they have cast some of the humans, and I know one of them is, I think, the lead from In the Heights. So
I do like him.
So,
will it be a musical? If there's a Transformers musical, I'm all in.
I think that's one property that has never done a musical.
And I would say it's a shame.
Actually, arguably the Transformers movie, the animated movie from '86, is a musical.
I mean, that's like music videos. They don't actually sing.
That's true.
They don't sing.
They rock out.
Although, who's the speed freak talker?
Blur?
Or
no? I mean, yeah. Blur
could like speed rap.
Yeah, that's true. Could.
And Cup could like slow rap, Snoop Dogg type rap.
I mean, Jazz could throw down. I don't know what you're talking
about. Jazz could play jazz.
If you can imagine this done well, just somehow magically it is, Joss Whedon, like kind of with the quality of writing he had on, say, Dr. Horrible or the Buffy musical, if he were to do it, like, it could be actually like super good. Never happen.
Seth MacFarlane could do it. He's a
Seth MacFarlane could also pull it off.
Lin-Manuel Miranda could do a Transformers.
Lin-Manuel Miranda coming off of Hamilton, he's going to do Transformalton.
Did they ever do an episode of The Orville that had musical stuff other than like finding occasional excuses to have
it? No, I don't think they did, which is kind of weird.
Yeah, honestly, yeah, if there was some kind of weird nano plague causing singing or just whatever ridiculous Star Trek
maybe
reason they wanted.
Maybe they'll do that when they come back at some point on Hulu.
They should do it.
They should do that. They should definitely be a musical episode.
This veered far astray of Beast Wars the movie.
I disagree. I think this makes perfect sense. Also, I do want to say, while I'm a fan of musical episodes in general, network TV needs to stop doing them because Lucifer's musical episode was terrible.
Oh.
And
it sounds ill-conceived from the beginning.
But it's on network TV.
Oh, it's on Netflix, actually, so.
Yeah.
So, yeah. I don't know. Anyway, I'm just saying, I want musical episodes, but not if they suck.
Right. I think that's true of everything.
So, Lin-Manuel Miranda needs to come in and do his Transformers musical.
I'll get the message to him.
Okay, good. Send out the Manuel single. We're talking comics the week of Wednesday, June 22nd. And there's a bunch of... first issues and stuff this week.
As well as the achingly anxiety-inducing final issue of Stray Dogs.
And the achingly not anxiety-inducing finale of Transformers Back to the Future.
Nice segue. I think that should be the title of this episode. Achingly not anxiety-inducing.
I don't think it should. But I'll put it on the list.
That's the that's a general pitch for our podcast.
Yes,
achingly not anxiety-inducing.
let's talk about first issues. DC has a couple notable ones. Actually, a few. They've been doing their sort of anthology books. They did the Superman... Red, White, and Blue, based off of Batman Black and White. And now they're launching Wonder Woman Black and Gold, which is a anthology series with a bunch of stories by John Arcudi, Ryan Suk, Becky Cloonan, Amy Reeder,
and they're essentially black and white stories, but they are picking up on the gold of the lasso and on her eagle emblem thing on her
right. And in this issue,
it looks
actually
neat.
Actual gold. She's, like, protecting a bank vault full of gold from somebody.
It looks cool. It's not something I would have expected. I would have thought, like, oh, you just go black and white. But they did find, colors to go with every one of the
Ryan
heroes.
Does Ryan Suk actually do artwork in
there? He does. He does. And it's actually very nice.
Beautiful.
Yeah. It's sort of his painty-looking thing. It's very, very pretty.
Nice.
Yeah. So, worth a look for Wonder Woman fans. DC produces Infinite Frontier, number 1 of 6, which is the follow-up to their number 0 that was, like, their big... multiverse reshuffling.
Yep.
This is more sort of crazy multiverse stuff. There's some notable returns of characters. There's a team made up of President Superman, Alan Scott, Jade,
Captain Carrot,
Barry Allen, Cameron Chase. It isn't like an all-star issue of like
multiverse.
Talking about the multiverse.
Yep.
It was one of those issues that it's crazy and kind of wonky ideas that shouldn't work, but somehow they do. For at least for me.
Well, I think it is like if people like the Morrison crazy stuff.
Yeah.
Or if they were looking, a lot of people like want to go from event to event. They're like, hey, what happens after death metal? this is what happens after
right.
Death Battle.
Yep. And this is taking elements from Morrison's Final Crisis and
right.
Bringing that team as sort of the forefront and adding a few members. I also was kind of thrown, but I liked the idea that the multiverse is a known thing. Like people know about it on all the Earths. So they know that the possibility of... they have a doppelganger or something.
I saw that, and I wasn't sure if it was just... yeah, I saw there's, like, texts going around between people as they, like, start to wonder, like, oh, what if there's an Earth where I'm, like, leading a better life? I want to go there and stuff like that.
That's fair. And kill my more better self and take over their life.
I mean, that's a very Rick and Morty concept.
It is, yes.
I feel like this is one of those books where I could sort of describe it because it has a pretty large in life premise for DC as, if you think you might like it, you might like
it. You might like it. That's correct. Yeah. For those who like this kind of thing, this is the kind of thing they like.
Yes.
Quote, I don't know, the Yogi Berra thing?
Yeah, I like, it's not Yogi Berra, but it is a famous quote, and...
it's from someone.
It's from someone.
Somebody tell us who it is.
Definitely from someone.
Yep. Someone said it. and then Batman Reptilian, which is a long gestating project from Black Label that is Garth Ennis. It was originally written for Steve Dillon, but Liam Sharp has stepped in to do it. And it is there's someone killing Batman's villains, and he's not okay with it.
It's got, I think, some of the trademark intensity of a Garth Ennis comic, and the very moody art compares maybe most to something like Arkham Asylum as far as its painted look.
Yeah,
reminded me of like Glenn Fabry or
sure. Who's the other guy? The Lobo, Simon Bisley.
Yeah.
He's definitely, it's not the usual style for Liam Sharp.
No.
But yeah, it's interesting to see him working, Garth Ennis working back on a superhero project. It is Black Label, but they don't like push it so hard that it's like rated R. I think it's like PG-13.
Right.
Just kind of, it's just pushing the edges.
Right.
What else we got?
Marvel has Gamma Flight number 1, which is a spin-off team from Immortal Hulk. This team has Crusher Creel and Titania, his wife, Puck from Alpha Flight, Doc Sasquatch, which is Leonard Samson temporarily trapped in Sasquatch's body. Dave, you'll be happy to know he is on a quest to get his old body back and presumably to return Sasquatch to his body.
The Squatch is back.
And also Dr. Charlene McGowan, who was part of the like Shadow Base people, and now she's like on their side. And this weird gamma mutate of Rick Jones and a gamma-infected teenager named Del Fry. So this is like weird gamma mutates. They're on the run from the government that created them, and now they have to like go out and help other gamma mutates.
I feel like if you're reading and enjoying Immortal Hulk, this is kind of the next thing.
You're going to want to read this. Also, it has the return of a Hulk supporting character we've not seen in Immortal Hulk, which has been pretty extensive, actually. So I feel like with Immortal Hulk wrapping up, this is your like bonus epilogue kind of thing, even though it's going to run conterminous with the actual end of Immortal Hulk.
Also, like, I really like Al Ewing's take on Puck.
I actually really like his take on Crusher Creel and Titania.
Yeah, that too.
They're a cute couple.
They are.
I don't know how I feel about them being anti-heroes instead of villains.
Yeah. Well, they get teleported out to go help this thing, and they're both like, "Hey, we don't do this. We're not working for anybody." And they get teleported into Austin actually to stop a gamma mutate. And Creel says, "Fine, we're doing this, but afterward, I get to rob a bank."
That sounds like a decent balance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Also, I do kind of always like it when superheroes come to Austin or mention it.
Yep. It's Austin's attack by Gamma Mutate, so if you guys didn't notice, that happened.
I mean, we're also the home of Hot Girl.
It's true.
And other things.
Yeah. Marvel Voices is their occasional one-shots. This is their Pride one-shot. It has, a dozen stories in it?
Yeah.
By various creators. It introduces a new character or two.
I've only started to look at it, but one of the coolest things was actually just their introduction, which is kind of like a few three or four pages of kind of walking through the gay history of the Marvel Universe, the queer history of the Marvel Universe, and sort of notable events like obviously North Star's coming out, but like kind of just like how it wove around, and some people are quieter about it, and some people are brash about it. And but it like sort of name checks all the major sort of events and heroes that have come out.
Yep.
So and then there's lots of specific stories on specific characters. There's some pinups and things. There's a reprint of the crazily 90s comic in which North Star did come out.
Yep.
And man, I if you haven't seen that, I'm not going to say it's good. But it is something else. It is a slice of 1992 in a way you never thought possible.
It's true.
It is achingly non-anxiety. Yes.
But yeah, it's DC already did their Pride special, and this is Marvel's follow-up to it, their version of it. Boom has a new book called Good Luck, in which the manifestation of good luck and bad luck come to Earth and cause some problems, and 30 years later, things happen.
Interesting.
Yeah. It's another one with nice art.
Yeah,
really
agreed.
Fun premise. Spawn's Universe is the big launch this week for people. There's some art here by Jim Chung, Brett Booth, Steven Segovia, Marcio Takara. Also, a lot of it is done by Todd McFarlane.
Let me ask this, Randy. Is this a one-shot that introduces the four Spawn Universe books, or will this itself be a book ongoing?
I think this introduces the concept of all, like, the bigger...
The Spawn multiverse?
Yeah, and then it's going to be, what, like, King Spawn, and then...
King Spawn's up next,
and Spawn Universe.
And then Gunslinger Spawn, and then The Scorched.
We had a lot of interest in this.
I believe it is a one-shot. Yes, people are super excited. If you have a favorite Spawn, that Spawn shows up in here, because I saw, like, Angel Spawn... I saw, like, Gunslinger Spawn. If you like cyborg monkeys, they're in here.
I believe you're talking about Cygor.
I am.
There's also a bunch of different cool covers on these, spotlighting the different Spawn incarnations. If you swing by tomorrow, you can pick from some cool covers.
If you like Spawn, we're not going to judge you. Kids love chains.
Also, I realized that McFarlane likes hyphens in his words, like Cygor, and I think it was Overkill.
Yeah, Overkill.
Yeah.
Well, I think it was supposed to be named Overkill, and then they realized somebody else had used that name already. So
right.
Overkill.
Yeah.
Does not exactly trip off the tongue.
There's a new image book called Vinyl, which looks weird. That's all I have to offer on this one. It looks very strange.
I don't think, in our time today, I don't think anybody got around to reading it. But I'm going to suggest, because it's an image number one, you should go ahead and give it a shot.
Bro, would you? Black
Hammer. Too good for it?
Black Hammer Reborn is the return of the Black Hammer series 20 years later, when the titular Black Hammer is now a mom and wants nothing to do with her superhero past, and it's like it keeps coming back to haunt her.
Yep. This is back with Jeff Lemire, original writer of the series.
Yeah. With a new artist, Caitlin Yarsky. It's really good.
I have not flipped through that. I was going to say he really always works with good artists. So
it's really good. I recommend it to people, whether you've read Black Hammer or not. If you've read Black Hammer, you're going to read it.
Yeah, that's the thing I've discovered with most of the miniseries from that, and just sort of Jeff Lemire's kind of, I think, his philosophy of these kind of things is that, you could read almost any of them standalone, even though they are part of this shared universe. You don't need to have read everything.
Yep. Also, as mentioned, the conclusion of Transformers Back to the Future. I don't want to spoil anything, but there's like three or four cool Transformers in this that are based on Back to the Future properties. There's a fun arc for some supporting Back to the Future characters. There's some nods to various Back to the Future things. This was great fun. I did not expect to enjoy it as much as I did.
Because it took a little while to, I think, come out. It kind of started mid-pandemic, Randy.
Yeah.
I only read the first issue, but what I remember is, I think it's sort of like, I don't know if it was midway through there, but they blinked to the future, and it was like I don't know what the town is that he lives in.
Hill Valley
has been taken over by the Decepticons, and Biff is like the human liaison, who sold out humanity to them. It's so funny and fun, there's just a ton of great ideas. And of course, at its heart is the Lamborghini that turns into a Transformer, whose name is
not Lamborghini, DeLorean.
DeLorean, yep. Gigawatt.
Stray Dogs came to a conclusion, as Dave mentioned. It is harrowing, and is like if you go to Did the Dog Die, you will find that yes, some dogs die in Stray Dogs.
Yes, and yet it is not super gory or bloody, but it is intense and it is a little heart-rending. I want to say I'm going to mildly spoil it and say there is an ending that errs on the side of being a happy ending or a mostly positive ending, but there's for sure big consequences. That in case you haven't read this one or you weren't here when we talked about it before, it is like if you were to just flip through it, you have what looks like a Disney comic because the dogs are all drawn like Disney or Don Bluth style kind of dogs. But these dogs who all have very short-term memories are kind of starting to think that their owner might be a killer. And we, of course, the viewer, are pretty sure He is. Yep. He's like a serial killer, and it seems like he's been taking the dogs of people he kills, and they just don't remember it. So, yes, it is very harrowing on that level, and these dogs don't exactly have a lot of assets, and them trying to figure out, is their master, who they otherwise revere, a killer?
Right.
And then, if he is, can they stop him? Is at the heart of it, and it's really good, but yeah, it is not for the faint of heart. And if you know, if anything I said in there kind of was a little triggering for you, yeah, don't do this one. But if it sounded kind of interesting to you, look up a little bit of the art online. Maybe consider getting the trade paperback if you haven't been following it, because it's pretty good.
Also, they are reprinting issues 1 through 4, I believe, next week, so we will have all of it.
Oh, okay. That's pretty cool. You can even get it before the trade paperback hits.
Other stuff on my list, Shadecraft number 4, which continues to be like one of my favorite new books. It's the guys who did Skyward. There's some big reveals. They're continuing to sort of build the premise. Blue Flame number 2, which we all like the first issue of. This is a Vault's like superhero with a little bit of meta to it that I've been really digging. Fantasy IV Life Story number 2, another issue of Silk. Another issue of Guardians of the Galaxy, which is leading into a new Annihilation story. Teen Titans Academy, where they're continuing to tease the Red X story. And Robin number 3, which we've all generally been enjoying.
Yep.
Anything else on the list that I missed?
I don't think so.
I mean, X-Books for the week, there's...
There's Wolverine and...
Way of X.
And Sword.
And Sword, yep.
Did we mention Robin?
Yep.
We did.
Okay, yep. Cool.
Yep. No, yeah, that's all. The X-Men books are all still covering the Hellfire Gala, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
If you had told me once upon a time, say 10, 20 years ago, that the big event that everybody would be reading would be about a big gala extravaganza costume kind of party in X-Men, I'd be like, yeah. Only if Grant Morrison is still writing it after 20 years. But no, it has become a thing. Everybody, people seem to be enjoying the ride, and... I'm not keeping up, so I'll be curious to see what the big developments are when all is said and done.
Also worth noting, if people are fans, the Complete Thor by Jason Aaron, Volume 1 and 2, came back out this week. So if you wanted to go back and catch the Jason Aaron Thor stuff, that is out as trades now.
Nice.
All right, we're going to take a break, and then we're going to come back and talk about a movie. So I did get out to the movies this weekend, and I saw Quiet Place 2, which Dave had already seen.
Yep.
And
that was, I guess, formally my sort of first new movie back to the theaters.
Right. I liked this. I think I liked it as well as I liked the first one, which is to say I think it's really good.
I think so, too. I think that's a fair overall evaluation. It continues to maintain the tension, keeps the family at the heart of it, but throws in some kind of neat twists and turns.
One thing I was noticing as I watched this is that... what's his name? Who's the guy who's the director? John Krasinski?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
He's a pretty accomplished director for a guy who is... I mean, I'm sure he directs some TV.
It feels very confident.
There's some... I mean, yeah, he's very in control of the tension and that kind of thing.
Well, there's several times where there's three action scenes going on simultaneously.
That's what I was
going
to mention, yeah.
Yeah, like, it weirdly, like, not to reference the ultimate nerd property, Star Wars, but, you know, when they're cutting between Endor and Luke and Vader fighting and then the attack on the Death Star, and it's like you're all caught up? Well, there's at least twice, I think, in this, where sort of major suspense sequences, not action per se, but suspense sequences are going on at multiple places roughly simultaneously, and they're intercutting between them in a really cool way.
Hmm. Also, there's a few things where he frames a few shots to really show off the sort of what this world looks like, this sort of post-apocalyptic alien invaded world. And in particular, his lead character, I forget her name, but the girl who's deaf.
Yeah.
There's a couple shots
who
of her,
was
like,
kind of, by the way, did feel like the legit sort of breakout character in the first one.
Yeah.
And gets lots of... She's kind of at the heart of the story.
She's very much the lead in this one. And she is... There's a bit of her, like, geared up in the train that I felt like, oh, if this were, like, a really big property, like, a bunch of artists would do that scene, would draw that scene.
Oh, interesting. Yeah, I could see that.
Where she's, like, oh, looking out of the side of it. And, like, and there's some great shots in here.
Hmm. What it starts with, though, is, as the trailer hinted... a prequel sort of sequence.
Yes.
Probably, what do you want to say, maybe 10, 15 minutes of the movie is sort of the day it happened.
Yeah.
And any sort of sense of how quickly it happened. And they're out sort of trying to do some normal family stuff, like in a Little League game. And if you saw that this was featured in all the trailers, is a bit where the mom is like driving the kids somewhere. and there's like they're behind like a bus or something like that,
they're,
and like
reversing away from a bus.
Yeah. This thing is like one of the things is inside the bus, shredding people presumably, and is like crawling out to get to them. So lots of very like those kind of intense sequences are back in there. Yes, we have seen the creatures in a way we didn't at this point in the first movie, but it's still just as harrowing because everybody's always walking on almost like literal pins and needles.
Because
it's like, I think people all know the premise. These creatures, which are not fully explained, are attracted to sound.
Yeah.
A little, like, anything more than, like, step walking on softest grass could potentially draw them, and they'll be there in seconds. Or occasionally when the plot needs it, after a couple minutes.
I was going to say, so here's one of the things that happens. It's an alien-aliens thing.
Yeah.
In Alien, you had one creature who's, like, had to be just completely terrifying.
Yeah.
And you don't see it very much. It's, like, very end, you see it.
Yeah.
In this one, we've already seen it. And so, even though there was more than one in the first one, it's the same kind of scale. Like, all of a sudden, there's more of them, and we got to see what they do, which means that it's going to feel a little bit less like this. These are omnipresent, indestructible monsters, and more of a, like,
and not quite,
it's a threat you have to deal with.
Not quite instant death.
Yes, yeah.
Like, when they dramatically need it to be, it could be instant
death.
They're
super fast,
though.
Yes. Yeah.
Now, there was something that I, like, this is a, you know, getting a little bit more into spoiler territory. From the trailers, you see at one point the family like running through some ruins and like they get caught in a trap.
Yeah.
And then you see that like who the guy who comes out is the actor
Cillian Murphy.
Cillian Murphy, you might know him as the Scarecrow, the head of the lead character in 28 Days Later,
Peaky Blinders,
bunch of other stuff. And he's like all grizzled looking in this, working with an American accent by the way,
yep.
And you see him in the flashback. He was a friend of the family. And from the trailers, I very much got the idea that he was like, oh, he's one of these guys who catches them, and he's like going to be like the governor or whatever
sinister,
on Walking Dead.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
They play him very sinister in the trailers. He is not that sinister
in
this. He is a broken person.
Nor is, I don't remember, I can't remember his name.
Isn't Jimon Hansu.
Jimon
Hansu. There's a scene of Jimon Hansu and Cillian Murphy like closing a door on the kids. And it feels in the trailer very sinister, but here it's actually sort of protective.
Right. Yeah, I mean, and I will say pretty good, that's actually a pretty decent trailer editing because I was like, oh, I feel like I've seen a lot of this movie.
Yeah.
And I won't say too much more about what happens to that, but he does end up becoming, he's closer to an ally, but like he's not exactly into putting his neck out there. And he's got all his own sort of trauma that he's kind of processing. But he was a good addition to the cast.
Yep.
He, in some ways, fills in for the role of... Krasinski. But, like, everybody does kind of get stuff to do in it.
Yeah.
So the brother in it... I don't know any of their names, by the way.
I don't remember any of their names either.
But the younger brother who's, like, he's... What is he, like, 12? Something like that?
15? Yes.
I don't know.
But he's definitely, like, doing all the anxiety stuff, and he's, like...
And he's injured in this.
Yeah, he's
so
very seriously injured.
He has to deal with this sort of injury thing throughout.
Yeah.
There's, of course, the mom.
Yep.
And the daughter... And there's Cillian Murphy, and there's you do see some more dangerous people out there.
Yep.
And then the rest is like kind of all the raw suspense stuff that you saw from the first movie. I was pretty happy with it. Sometimes, Randy, I think I was telling you this, that I can't help but do a little bit of that thing that I don't normally do in movies, which is slightly second guess the premise or how they should be dealing with it. I was like, everybody should be walking around with a bag of rocks. If you accidentally make a sound, you just throw that rock into the nearest tree or tool shed or anything, and the monsters will hopefully go to that. I'm like, why don't they just do that?
Everyone should have sonic grenades.
Yes, they should have sonic grenades.
But the original movie alluded to that this happened so fast, and it will, like, wipe people out within, like, weeks instead of...
Right.
But Dave's point being, anybody can find a bag of rocks.
Right. Once you kind of know that they're attracted to sound, you could probably be a little bit more cautious so that stepping on a stick didn't doom you.
It was an instant death.
Right. You could just throw something, like, even if I had a backpack on, I'd just pitch it 20 feet from me and let the monster go to the backpack.
We do learn something else that they're vulnerable to in this movie, too, which I thought was interesting.
And that was like sort of a big thing at the end of the first one. You found out something that they were vulnerable to, and there is some sort of follow up on that in this one.
I believe they said they want to make a trilogy. I think they want to do a third one, which I assume would be like taking the planet back kind of thing.
Yeah, I could see it.
I would go see it.
Early stretching it. It feels like it could fit a third movie.
That said, there is one gripe I have.
All right.
We did the flashback.
Yeah.
So we get to see them landing or whatever.
Oh, right.
I was hoping they were going to do a little more flashback from there and explain why the fuck they decided to have a baby in the midst of all this.
It's always been, I thought, one of the most awkward plot points, the first one.
I understand the first movie, it wasn't part of the scope. Like, they weren't telling that story. They were just like, it's just a thing. But they've had now enough time and a full pandemic during which they could have been like, people really want to know why they would have a baby. We should probably explain that. And you could explain it. You could do a thing where, like, they thought they had good birth control.
Anything from oops.
Yeah.
To...
Because they lost their kid. That's why it could have been when they lost their child that basically the only way to keep his wife sane.
Right.
That she was like, we have to have another baby. I feel like something to make up for the child we've lost or something like that.
Right.
Like, there are answers, but why not give them to us?
Yeah. Well, the weird thing is the movie showed pre-disaster and then post the events of the first movie.
Yeah.
But there wasn't really... if the son had said, like, sort of like, why did you do that, Mom?
Yeah.
You know, why would y'all do that? Like, somebody could have voiced it.
Yeah.
And the family members who were most in danger by it
would have been fair. Hell, the guy they run into, who's like their own family friend, is like, why did you do this? The guy who's the very practical, like, there's no get out, you know, nobody, this is ridiculous. Like, he could have very much easily the character be like, why would you have a new baby?
If I had to guess... That particular plot point doesn't interest Krasinski.
Yeah.
He's like, there's a million reasons why you might do it, and this was all about, like, it is kind of how they often do zombie stuff. It's like, reason why the zombie plague happens isn't important, and, like, sometimes, like, how a person got where they are isn't important. You just have to deal with whatever's happening.
And I really like these movies, and so I can forgive it. But it's such a flaw at the center of the movie for a lot of people. Like, anyone you talk about it with, that will come up.
Yeah.
And if they didn't like it, it's one of the reasons they didn't like it. And I'm like, man, I can't argue with that. There's no argument for it.
Like, any sort of sound at all in this world can bring doom upon you. Let's have a screaming baby.
Let's have a screaming baby. Which, by the way, a fantastic drink with pineapple.
I thought that was like a illegal firework.
Oh, you're right. Screaming baby.
But I still, as a kid, I used to launch screaming babies all the time.
I was thinking of the famous Polynesian drink, the Wailing Infants. Anyway.
So we endorse the movie.
Yes.
You might have a few little gripes in it, but, like, as long... I do think that this kind of movie, Bird Box, any of those things that are kind of in this vein that have a bit of a major plot hook, you gotta play ball a little bit with them. If you're gonna have fun with it, you gotta kind of... You do have to sometimes be willing to turn off your overly critical thoughts and just imagine, you know, maybe give it what I would call the charitable viewing, which is to say... If you think there's, like, maybe a little bit of a plot hole there, or why would they have a kid, think about the reasons it might happen. Slot them in yourself.
No, prize it for yourself.
Yeah. Yeah, lazy bum.
DIY storytelling. It's the future. Anyway, 2/3 of the Rogues Management recommends Quiet Place 2.
And when Nick sees it...
He will as well.
I think he will.
Yeah. I love the first one.
Okay, if you love the first one, you will dig this.
Yeah, I think you will.
And also, you know, I gotta say, like, there's a strong handle on, like, the family dynamic. Mm-hmm. Great acting on everybody's part. Of course, the suspense is very well handled.
Yeah, the special effects are good.
They really know how to do that stuff. Randy, let me ask one final thing here.
Yes.
When you see you see something come from the sky, like a crashed ship, it looks like, or something like that, and then, like, it's like coming down, and then these things are in the city, like.
Yeah.
I don't even know if you see it actually impact
before
they're in there.
No, it's like instantaneously they're there.
They're there, and I'm like, did they just run thousands of miles, hundreds of miles, or were there, like, other crashes? It's another one of those things that, like, they don't quite explain, but, man, they do seem to move fast.
Yeah, they definitely seem to be at, like, super speed type thing, except when they don't.
Yep. honestly, that's almost every horror monster ever.
Sure. Yeah. it didn't particularly bother me, but I did notice it.
Occasionally funny for a bit of a laugh.
And I'm like... Wait a minute. why aren't they dead right now? Anyway. So we liked it. And that will wrap it up for us this week. We'll be back next week with more. Until that time,
Yo, Joe.
Roguecast is a weekly podcast broadcast from Rogues Gallery Comics and Games in Round Rock, Texas. You can find us online on Facebook and at www.roguesgallerytx.com and email us comments or questions at roguesgallerytx@gmail.com. Thanks for listening.